Thank you, choir, and thank you, Ron, for reading for us. Ask you a question. What is the most scared that you've ever been? I mean, if you've had one, the moment you thought life was about to be over for you. A World War II veteran told me about landing at a Saipan beach when he was not quite 21. Forget all the imminent danger that was on shore. His landing craft was overturned by a rogue wave just as they should have been getting off of it. And he and several others were thrown overboard. He went to the bottom of the ocean floor in a few feet of water and for a moment was pinned beneath the vehicle. He was under there long enough to say to God, "Really? This is how it's all going to end? Okay, Lord, if this is it, I'm ready." About that time, another wave washed in and it jostled the vehicle just enough that he could pull himself out from under it and surface. And he got up out of the water and collected himself, grabbed a weapon, and ran onto the beach following the soldiers that he had landed with and joined the fight with nothing waiting for him there that was any more fearsome than what had just happened under the water. For a few years, I had the occasional nightmare about the moment of impact in the car wreck that I mentioned recently in my Tidewater News column. When I allow myself, I can still picture the split seconds leading up to the impact, knowing that it's going to happen and knowing that it's not going to be good. Life sure can scare us at times. Now, if you aren't on social media, then I hope what I'm about to describe will still be clear to you. It's difficult to describe what is, in essence, a photograph, but I'm going to try my best. We live in the age of the meme on social media, those usually funny photographs that come around on various social media platforms. Someone will have overlaid a caption on the photo that makes the picture funny. One of the categories that's often the funniest are the ones where someone has described a negativity that you don't need in your life. For instance, there might be a picture of a person looking at a plate of bacon. And the caption will say, "If someone tells you that bacon's not good for you, stop talking to them. You don't need that kind of negativity in your life." I think those kind of things are funny. Way funnier, by the way, than some of your political posts that I see come through from time to time. The list of ones that are like that are long, and I think they're funny. If someone tells you that macaroni and cheese isn't a vegetable, then stop talking to them because you don't need that kind of negativity in your life. If someone tells you biscuits and gravy is not real food, stop talking to them. If someone tells you you have too many guitars, Jeff Ziegler appreciated that one in the early service. If someone tells you that your hair's too big, stop talking to them. When the right picture is put with these, they can be so funny. But there's a grain of truth to these memes as well, isn't there? We all have to figure out what to pay attention to and what to filter out. Who to filter out, what's important to us and what isn't important to us. Of course, when it comes to trying to decide what we're actually supposed to care about and what we're supposed to ignore or not care about, life can sometimes be no joking matter. I have my list of things that I just don't seem to care about as much as other people care about it. I keep the inside and the outside of my car pretty clean. Outside and in, passenger compartment's going to look great. But if you're with me and something causes us to need to put something in the back of the car, you may find out that I don't care about the back of my car as much as you do. I keep my closets in fairly good order at home, but I struggle to keep my office desk clean. Some of you like for even your social organizations to have officers and minutes kept. While I might not care about that, I may just want to come have dinner with you and enjoy the company, not sit through a meeting for that kind of thing. We all have things we care about and things we don't care about. We also all have our own reactions to surprise or fear, don't we? Some people panic and fly into action, fly right up into the air, while others take a beat and get their thoughts together and assess the surprise to see if it's actually a danger. Some people are just more excitable than others. I had a church member years ago who went for an MRI. The imaging was going to be important in his treatment, but as some do, he had a panic attack once they placed him inside the machine and he was unable to finish the session. They had to pull him out of there and just do without that part of the data. Finally, my time came to have an MRI. I had a torn ligament in my wrist and they pushed me into the machine and told me they needed me to be in there and be still for 30 minutes. I fell asleep for the last 15 minutes inside the MRI machine. They woke me up pulling me out of there and told me they'd been trying to talk to me. I was having a good nap. When someone is more casual about something than we would be, we often jump to the conclusion, rightly or wrongly, that they simply don't care. Rightly or wrongly, we can get our feelings hurt that they aren't as bent out of shape or burning off nervous energy about whatever it is, just like we are. Then on a whole nother level, there was Jesus in the back of the boat. I alluded to this story in another sermon recently. In chapter 4, Jesus has taught using some parables that are now familiar to us. A parable about a sower, one about a lamp under a bushel basket, one's about a mysterious and fast-growing seed, and then a mustard seed. We are told that not everyone understood these parables completely, just as we still do not understand them today when we hear them either. Then Jesus explains why he teaches in the parables, but makes sure in Mark makes sure that we know that Jesus would take the disciples aside now and again to explain the hidden truths found in the parables that they were seeing him use. This story follows that then, and it should disavow us of any delusions that the disciples had benefited so much from those little teaching sidebars where Jesus explained everything to them, such that they now understood just who and what Jesus was, because they didn't. I mentioned recently, in fact, I think it was last week, I mentioned recently our two cats, and I'm not going to mention them every Sunday, but here they are again. They were born together and yet could not be any more different. The little female is noticeably smart. Ladies, you should be happy about that. She's the smartest animal we've ever had. But she's high-strung and excitable. And from the time we got her, she's been prone to panic at any loud or unexpected noise, flying objects, or surprises. Meanwhile, her brother, big hulking brother, will sleepily glance up at one of us during the same incident and just look at us like, is this a thing? Am I going to need to be worried about this? Or can I just lay here like I already am? The difference between them could not be any more stark. Katniss will sometimes go airborne, wide-eyed, and it looks like in four different directions at one time when things happen. Early on, we came to describe her vast overreactions as "we're all gonna die" moments, because that's the look on her face. The disciples were convinced they were all dying. The storm threatened and tossed. It is described as a legitimate and terrifying deal. Archaeologists not long ago unearthed a fairly intact boat that might have been typical of Jesus' time. There was some fascination around the boat because of where it was found and because carbon dating placed its age as just about the time of Christ. Naturally, people began to speculate that it was within the realm of possibility that Jesus or some of his disciples could feasibly have ridden in that very boat, and that could be. My first reaction when I read that article about them finding the boat was to think of this story in Mark chapter 4. The boat just doesn't look very big. There wasn't, at least in this one that they found, what you would call a luxury of space. I don't think I would have liked to have been in that boat with the disciples when this storm came up. I'm sure their little boat, whatever size it was tossed about like a cork on the vast body of water as the conditions grew this violent. Mark Eddington writes about this episode and suggests that there's an even bigger picture here we ought to remind ourselves of. First of all, we don't have a good handle on this story if we haven't factored in, included the images of God's original act of creation. He believes the bruising storm here in Mark chapter 4 recasts creation in some ways, a watery chaos from which life and order is about to be brought. That's really what God did in bringing creation about. Further, he points out, raging waters, as you may remember, symbolized either death or the threat of death in much of Old Testament literature. So we are caused by this episode to look backward to best understand the dynamic between the disciples and Jesus here. We read this with our 21st century sensibilities and from the perspective of over 2,000 years of Christian history. But these poor fellows were living this in real time. And in the very first century, they were stuck in a boat in a bad storm, and things didn't look like they were going to work out well. And they were also far more Jewish in mindset than Christian, no matter how resistant we may be to that notion. Psalm 107, of course written hundreds of years before this incident depicted in the Gospels, sheds eerie light on its importance, where we hear Psalm 107 say, "He made the storm be still, and the waters of the sea were hushed, and then they were glad." This would have been in their awareness later, maybe, but not in the thick of the storm. Contrast just for a moment the sheer expanse between Jesus sleeping in the back of the boat and his poor disciples who, like our cat, are convinced their demise is at hand. Here's what I think may have been happening. Jesus knows what he knows. The disciples, meanwhile, are trying to catch up. They want to believe. They do believe partially, at least as far as they can understand. I mean, Jesus had taken them aside again and again and explained things to them. We had a sermon from that only a couple of months ago. They had seen him heal and perform miracles. By the way, I like having a sound effect every once in a while to work with. You ought to think about that. But I don't think I would have done any better than these disciples did if I'd been there. I know I wouldn't have. I think I wouldn't have understood any more than they did. And I could only imagine them hurriedly figuring out who was going to draw the short straw and have the job of waking up Jesus. And then again, in their exasperation, so evident in this short story, someone may have just been frustrated enough by then to volunteer for the job. The effect of us sympathizing with that part of the story is magnified when we notice one word staring back at us. When I get ready for a sermon each week, I print out the scripture and I sit back in my chair and I hold that in my hand and I read it through first thing. I want to read the text and react to it. I want to see where the energy is. I want to see where the questions are. I want to see where the problems are. And I want to see where the surprises are. There is one word in this story that leapt out and should leap out at us, I think. In contrast to the raging storm, Jesus is not just in the back of the boat. He is not just laying down. He is not just asleep. He's on a cushion. Aren't these gospel writers marvelous storytellers at times? The disciples are in a raging storm that they are convinced is their demise, and Jesus is on a cushion, asleep. There's a gulf between them that is far larger than the boat. And I want to ask you, I want to ask us all, who among us hasn't lain awake at night and cried out to the Lord the very same type of thing the disciples did? God, don't you care? Or variations on this. Lord, where are you? God, I'm scared right now. Or maybe we have said in the middle of the night, Lord, can you do something to relieve this? God, I feel abandoned here. I feel forgotten in my life. What is recorded in verse 38 of our story today is even one step beyond perhaps those kinds of pleas. Because here the disciples actually do something similar to what Mary and Martha did recently. They fuss at their master. Their cry sounds on paper like a question, "Lord, where are you? Don't you care?" In reality, it functions as a "do something" rant, because it looks like he just doesn't care. And that's where our story truly starts. Past is prologue here for them and for us. Jesus, now awakened, does not even reply to the disciple who spoke to him. In fact, his true reply is to talk not to them but to the storm, "Peace, be still." And the waters grew calm, and the raging storm stopped right then. And it's striking that this story only now describes their fright. All the other is just obvious from what we're reading. We infer all the other fear up to this point in the story. It's obvious in the telling of it. But now, and only now, after Jesus calms the storm and things get quiet, do we hear just how scared the disciples are around him. Jesus stops the storm with his words and then turns and asks them if they are still without faith. Only then are we actually told that they are afraid, as if the only thing more fearsome than the storm just happened right in front of them. Jesus stopped it with a power that only God could have. The Greek says that the disciples were only then phobos megos, afraid with a great fear. Michael Lindvall points out that if it were a mother comforting her child in this story, if honest, she might not say that there's nothing to be afraid of, because there was something to be afraid of. Instead, she might say, "Don't be afraid, you are not alone." If it were my dad lifting something too heavy for me when he was little, he might have said, "I've got this, don't worry." But he wouldn't have told me it wasn't heavy. Jesus scared them so much because there was something to be afraid of, something all too real. The storm would have killed them, and he simply put it away with his words. And it seems to dawn on them for the first time in all of this, that the Jesus they have been traveling with, the one whose teachings they have been hearing, the one who had wisdom they found compelling, also had power over creation. Forces of nature too brutal to be tamed that only God could have. They were afraid. Like us, they had asked one question, "Jesus, do you not care?" But the answer they got scared them even more. But it also may have given them hope. Our God has power. A scene from John Bunyan's classic allegorical novel, The Pilgrim's Progress, finds the main character, Christian, near the end of his journey, and it has been a life of struggle that he has led. Now at the end, he's got to cross a fearsome river along with his friend, who is named Hopeful. As they wade in, Christian says, "Oh, I sink in deep waters. The billows go over my head. All of the waves go over me." But his friend Hopeful replies with what may be the most grace-filled words of all time, "Be of good cheer, my brother. I can feel the bottom, and it is good." I happen to think our God can still calm the storms of our living. Maybe not always in the way we might choose. Maybe not always on the schedule we think is pertinent. "Lord, do you not care? We are perishing." But our God has power. We may find ourselves wondering where God is from time to time. Like Habakkuk in the Old Testament, we may find ourselves asking, Lord, how long? Like the psalmist, we may find ourselves asking, why sometimes? I believe that my life in Jesus Christ is the most secure place for living that it can be in a world that can cloud up and rain all over us in the cruelest of ways and at the worst of times, because our God has power that would probably scare us if we truly understood. And it's because of that that this story gives me hope. Our hymn of response is found listed in your bulletin. It's hymn number 437, How Wide the Love of Christ. This may be the Sunday that it all comes together and you want to unite or reunite your life in the company of these believers here at Franklin Baptist Church. This may be the time when you have gotten ready to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and as your Savior. This may be the time when there's something else you'd like to share with me, and if so, I'll be waiting right down here during the hymn of response. Otherwise, your response may be best voiced by standing if you are able. Hymn number 437. Let's stand and sing.